I want you to imagine just for a second that you're sitting in a massive roaring stadium.
Oh, like one of those massive arena.
Exactly. Like thousands of fans screaming. The lights are blinding. It's the year 2026. And up on the main stage, you've got this elite esports team locked in a championship match.
Right.
But as you look closer at the players, you notice something is, well, fundamentally different. They're wearing these small, glowing red devices on their heads, and they are completely silent.
No shouting, no call-outs.
Yeah. None of the frantic communication you'd expect from a normal team. They are coordinating, like telepathically. And you watch their in-game avatars move with this chilling, almost non-human precision.
Wow.
It is completely flawless. And the opposing team, the ones playing without this tech, they basically look like children trying to fight against highly advanced war machines.
I mean, it sounds like a scene pulled straight from a dystopian sci-fi movie, right?
Totally.
But as our sources today reveal, this is rapidly becoming the actual reality of modern competitive gaming. We've officially crossed a major threshold.
Yeah, we have, which is actually the perfect jumping off point.
Yeah.
Welcome to this custom deep dive put together especially for you, the learner.
Glad to be here.
Today, we are taking a massive stack of source material. We're talking scientific research, official reports from the International Esports Federation, the World Anti-Doping Agency, and cutting-edge tech trend analyses.
A lot of heavy reading.
Oh, yeah. And we're using all of it to explore the newest existential threat to the $1.8 billion esports industry. We are talking about cybernetic doping.
It's a wild topic
Sure.
because the line between human and machine is just, well, it's evaporating.
Right.
But to really grasp how we arrived at telepathic headsets and brain-computer interfaces, we have to rewind a bit. We have to look at the chemical foundation that set the precedent for all of this.
Because it didn't start with wires.
Exactly. Modern esports doping didn't start with wires and electrodes. It started with pills.
Right. And the watershed moment for that was back in 2015. There was a professional Counter-Strike player named Corey Friesen. He goes by Sempus.
Oh, yeah. The interview.
Yeah. During this completely candid interview, he just casually admitted that his entire team was using Adderall during a major tournament, ESL1 Katowices. And he didn't even sound ashamed of it.
Not on.
It blew the lid off the industry. Suddenly, everyone had to acknowledge that cognitive doping wasn't just some fringe rumor, it was pervasive.
And when we look at the clinical data on Adderall, which, is an amphetamine primarily prescribed for ADHD, the competitive appeal becomes incredibly
Yeah,
obvious.
the source data on this is staggering.
Let's talk about the mechanism for a second. When a player takes Adderall, it floods their brain with two key neurotransmitters, dopamine and norepinephrine.
Okay.
Dopamine acts as a signal enhancer, right? It makes the brain highly motivated and alert. Meanwhile, norepinephrine acts as a noise filter, just shutting out distractions. So the result is a 35% increase in sustained focus and attention and a 42% improvement in working memory. But most critically for a gamer, it causes a massive reduction in reaction time.
Okay, let's unpack this because we really need to understand what those numbers actually look like in practice. The research says Adderall drops a player's reaction time from about 180 milliseconds down to 130
Which
milliseconds.
is huge.
Right. And that effect stays locked in for a solid 6 to 8 hours. Now, think about traditional physical sports. When a sprinter or a weightlifter uses anabolic steroids, the physical muscle growth is entirely
Oh,
obvious.
for sure. You can physically see the extra mass, the bulging veins.
Exactly, it's highly visible. But in esports, cognitive doping is completely invisible. We are talking about microscopic changes at the synaptic level.
Yeah.
You can't just look at a teenager sitting in a gaming chair and see that their neural pathways are firing a fraction of a second faster. It makes it incredibly difficult to police.
What's fascinating here is just how critical those 50 milliseconds really are in the context of professional play.
I mean, it's less than a blink of an eye.
Right, but in a precision-based game like Valorant or Counter-Strike, 50 milliseconds is quite literally the difference between virtual life and death.
Wow.
Think about it. If you and I turn a blind corner in the game at the exact same moment, and my brain processes your visual presence 50 milliseconds faster than your brain processes me,
You shoot first.
I pull the trigger first. I win
Yeah.
every single time.
That's insane. And the sources mention Adderall, obviously, but then there's this entire cocktail of other medications that don't even seem related to focus.
Yeah, it gets broader.
Like modafinil, I sort of get. The sources say it's meant for narcolepsy, so it gives players 12 plus hours of intense alertness without any physical fatigue.
Ritalin makes sense for the same reasons as Adderall, too.
Right. But I was genuinely confused when I read about propranolol. That is literally a blood pressure medication. What is a blood pressure pill doing in a video game tournament?
Well, that is a perfect example of players targeting specific biological responses. Propranolol is a beta blocker. When you're playing for a $2 million prize pool in front of 50,000 screaming fans, your body just floods with adrenaline.
Naturally.
And that adrenaline binds to beta receptors in your muscles, which causes your hands to shake. If you are trying to make a pixel-perfect sniper shot, a micro tremor in your hand ruins everything.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about the physical nerves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So propranolol essentially sits on those receptors and blocks the adrenaline from binding. Your heart rate stays low, and your hands stay perfectly still. You are completely bypassing the natural human stress response.
And players are doing this right under the noses of the regulators using a massive legal loophole, right? The TUE, or therapeutic use exemption.
Yes, what do you do ease?
Because under the current rules, a player can use a banned substance completely legally if they just submit medical proof of a condition like ADHD at least 30 days prior to a competition.
And the statistics surrounding those exemptions severely stretch credulity.
Yeah, to put it mildly.
The sources point out that in some professional esports leagues, up to 40% of the pros have a registered TUE for Adderall.
40%.
Right. When you compare that to the general global population, where ADHD prevalence is only around 5%.
The math simply doesn't work out.
It doesn't. It is a systemic exploitation of a medical loophole.
And even with legal substances like caffeine, the regulators are trying to put guardrails up. The International Esports Federation, or IESF, recommends capping caffeine intake at about 200 milligrams.
Which is roughly 2 cups of standard coffee.
Exactly. Because the sources explain that there's a biological ceiling to chemical enhancements. If you push past that 200 milligram threshold, the benefits actually invert.
You get the jitters.
Yeah, you start seeing severe anxiety, the hand tremors come back, and your in-game performance drops sharply.
And, you know, that biological ceiling is the exact catalyst for the next phase of our deep dive.
Because the pills weren't enough anymore.
Right. Players realize their nervous systems could only handle so much chemical stimulation before crashing. To break past that physical limit, they had to stop ingesting chemicals and start manipulating their brain's electrical signals directly.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Let's look at the Consumer Electronics Show, CES, in 2026.
The Neurable announcement.
Yes. A company called Neurable partnered with HyperX to reveal a revolutionary piece of gaming hardware. On the surface, it just looks like a normal surround sound headset.
Just standard gear.
Right. But the ear cups and the headband are actually embedded with EEG sensors electroencephalography. It monitors a player's brain activity in real time.
The performance claims are wild.
They are. By analyzing your brain waves, it supposedly helps reduce reaction time by another 43 milliseconds, increases aiming accuracy in first-person shooters by 3%, and acts as an early warning system for mental fatigue.
It reads the ambient electrical patterns of your brain and translates that into actionable data on your screen. It essentially makes the invisible visible. But reading data is just the passive application of neurotechnology. The active application is where we cross into deeply concerning territory. We are talking about TDCS.
Transcranial direct current stimulation.
Exactly.
Wait, this is the part of the research that genuinely threw me. We are talking about literally running raw electricity into your own skull to play a video game better.
That is exactly what it is. Players are running 1 to 2 milliamps of direct electrical current into specific targeted regions of their brain.
I mean, that sounds incredibly dangerous.
It does. And to understand why they do it, we have to look at the mechanism. TDCS doesn't shock the brain into acting. It's more like lowering the electrical resistance on a circuit.
Okay.
That tiny bit of current lowers the activation threshold needed for a neuron to fire. That means when a player consciously decides to pull a trigger, the brain signal travels down the neural pathway with almost zero friction.
And the brain mapping they used to do this is hyper-specific to the type of game being played, right? The sources break this down beautifully.
Yeah, it's very targeted.
Like, if you are playing a MOBA, which is essentially a high-speed, complex game of digital chess where strategy is everything, You run the current into the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex to artificially boost your working memory and decision-making speed.
Right.
But if you're playing a shooter and need raw twitch reflex aiming speed, you target the motor cortex. Or if you need better spatial attention to track enemies on a minimap, you stimulate the parietal cortex.
The customization of the enhancement is what makes it so powerful. But let's pause on the passive technology for a moment, like that neural headset we discussed. It brings up a profound ethical dilemma.
Well, let me push back on the ethics with a philosophical question for you. Think about that headset. If a device is simply using EEG to read and display brain data that already exists inside my own head, is that actually cheating?
It's a great question.
Or is it just a highly advanced mirror? Athletes in physical sports use heart rate monitors all the time to optimize their training and know when to push harder. Why is a brain monitor displaying my own fatigue any different?
It is a phenomenal question, and it highlights why this technology currently lives in such a regulatory gray area. It isn't a drug artificially boosting your system.
Right.
And it isn't software automatically aiming your gun. But that mirror gives you a profound competitive edge. If I had a dashboard showing me exactly when my focus is peaking and when my cognitive load is crashing, I can dictate the pace of the match.
You know exactly when to strike.
Exactly. I can push the attack when I know my brain is operating at 100% against an opponent who is essentially flying blind regarding their own cognitive state.
That makes a lot of sense.
But beyond the philosophy of fairness, the TDCS side of things presents a terrifying health risk.
Because it's completely unregulated, right?
Entirely.
Yeah.
You have players, sometimes kids under 16 years old, buying TDCS kits online and zapping their developing prefrontal cortices with electrical currents.
Wow.
The medical community has absolutely no long-term data on what this does to a teenage brain 5 or 10 years down the line. It is a massive, uncontrolled medical experiment.
That is deeply unsettling. But as extreme as external electrical zapping sounds, the sources show us it's just a stepping stone. We've gone from internal chemicals to external hardware, and now
we're going back inside.
Exactly. The industry is going back inside. We are entering the cyborg era with brain-computer interfaces, or BCIs. This fundamentally alters the very definition of what constitutes a human competitor.
This is the leap from standard neurotechnology into full-blown transhumanism. We are moving past wearing a headset to surgically embedding technology.
Like Neuralink.
Yes. Companies like Neuralink have developed implants that interface directly with the brain's motor cortex.
I want to use an analogy here because the mechanics of this are mind-bending. The sources describe players using these implants to control a game entirely without a physical mouse or a keyboard.
Right, no physical input.
They just think about an action and the avatar executes it. It's like cutting out the middleman in a supply chain. Usually, your brain has to send a signal down your spinal cord through your arm to your finger, which physically clicks a plastic button, which then sends an electronic signal down a wire to the computer.
That's a long journey for a signal.
Exactly. A BCI cuts out the arm, the finger, and the mouse. The brain just directly accesses the computer's mainframe.
And that elimination of the physical middleman is what shatters the biological ceiling we talked about earlier. By bypassing the physical nervous system entirely, these BCI players are achieving sub-50 millisecond reaction times.
Which is crazy.
The research is definitive on this, that speed is literally faster than what is biologically possible for a natural human being. The nervous system simply cannot transmit a physical signal that fast.
And the wild part is, people saw this coming. Back in 2018, the Institute for the Future published a speculative foresight scenario.
The mindset scenario.
Yeah. They imagined a device called Mindset, which allowed a fictional esports team called the New York Shock to communicate telepathically, perfectly syncing their strategies to absolutely dismantle their opponents.
And it's not fiction anymore.
No. What was written as a provocative piece of science fiction in 2018 is rapidly becoming our stadium reality in 2026.
The debate surrounding this is fierce, as you'd imagine. Proponents argue that BCIs push the absolute boundaries of performance. It opens up entirely new job markets, creating roles for neural coaches who analyze brain data instead of gameplay data.
But the cons are massive.
Huge. We are looking at unprecedented wealth inequality in the sport, where only the wealthiest organizations can afford to turn their rosters into cybernetic athletes.
Right.
And the cybersecurity implications are frankly terrifying. We are no longer talking about a hacker breaking into a team server. We are talking about the possibility of a bad actor remotely hacking into a player's actual brain implant during a championship match.
At this level of enhancement, esports ceases to be a human sport. It feels much more like a technological arms race, like it's a technological war being fought by biological drones.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the core casualty of this arms race is the human spirit of competition itself.
Yeah.
We watch sports, whether it's basketball, gymnastics, or competitive gaming, to witness the absolute limits of human dedication, physical training, and skill. When you introduce advanced BCIs, we transition from watching human potential to simply observing hardware potential.
Wow, yeah.
The competition devolves into a contest of which team purchased the most efficient neural implant rather than which human trained the hardest.
Which brings us crashing into a massive bureaucratic wall. The current rulebooks governing esports are fundamentally broken. We are dealing with a regulatory nightmare.
The gap between the technology and the rules is vast. The IESF partnered with the World Anti-Doping Agency to establish their baseline rules back in 2013.
Which feels like ancient history in tech years.
Exactly. And if you analyze that banned substance list, it only covers physical chemical metrics. It explicitly bans narcotics, cannabinoids, stimulants, and beta blockers. There is absolutely zero framework for hardware or neurotechnology.
Because when they wrote those rules over a decade ago, the idea of a player surgically plugging a USB interface into their motor cortex sounded utterly absurd.
Completely science fiction.
But now they're facing what the sources call the detection paradox. Catching chemical doping is straightforward. You take a blood or urine test, and the chemical footprint is there. But how do you catch electricity?
You can't. That is the paradox. A TDCS session leaves zero biological trace in a player's blood or urine. The current dissipates.
So they're completely in the dark.
Right. The only way to definitively prove someone used an electrical brain stimulator before a match is to implement incredibly dystopian, impractical measures. Regulators would literally need 247 video surveillance of the players' private lives, or they would have to conduct physical raids on their hotel rooms to confiscate the hardware.
And since raiding hotel rooms isn't exactly a viable strategy, the industry analysts have mapped out three potential future scenarios for how to handle this crisis. The first scenario is the concept of separate leagues.
Right, the split model.
Yeah. This would involve creating a strict natural league where players use zero enhancements alongside an enhanced league where players are free to use neurotech, BCIs, and monitored chemicals.
Much like the enhanced games.
Exactly. The sources note this is heavily inspired by Aaron Tuzo's 2026 Enhanced Games, where traditional athletes are openly encouraged to use science to upgrade their bodies.
On paper, the separate leagues model sounds like a clean, democratic compromise. Let the purists have their game and let the transhumanists have theirs.
So what does this all mean? Let me push back on that because I don't think it works in reality. Wouldn't the natural league just instantly become a boring, second-rate product for the viewers?
That's the fear.
Think about the audience. If you have the choice between watching normal humans play at normal speeds or watching a league of superhuman cyborgs moving at literally impossible speeds with telepathic coordination, the audience is going to flock to the spectacle.
Oh, absolutely.
The sponsors will follow the audience, and that dynamic effectively forces every young, aspiring 14-year-old player to medically alter and upgrade their brain just to have a chance at getting noticed by a team.
That is the exact fatal flaw of the separate leagues model, and it is why so many ethicists agree with your assessment. The economic pressure to upgrade would be insurmountable for young players.
It's a matter of urgent player safety, really.
Precisely. Which leads to the second scenario, zero tolerance. A complete and total global ban on all cognitive and cybernetic enhancements.
Yeah.
But as we just discussed with the detection paradox, a zero tolerance policy is entirely unenforceable.
Right.
If you cannot physically detect the electricity, you cannot ban the electricity.
So that leaves us with scenario three, which the sources call smart regulation.
Right. Which takes the form of a practical three-tier system. Tier one would be standard unenhanced gear, your normal mouse, mechanical keyboard, standard audio headset, and natural stimulants like caffeine kept strictly under that 200 milligram biological limit.
Makes sense.
Then tier two would be the regulated enhancement zone, requiring a specific permit. This covers valid, intensely verified TUEs for prescription medications and highly regulated, FDA-approved neurofeedback devices that only read data.
Okay, so the mirrors.
Exactly. Finally, tier three would be the strictly banned category unprescribed stimulants, unregulated TDCS kits, and any kind of direct brain-computer interface or surgical implant.
But implementing a tiered system like that requires massive practical solutions built from the ground up. You can't just slap a new page in a rulebook and call it a day.
No, it's a huge undertaking.
The sources lay out some very actionable structural steps here. Organizations like WD, and the IESF have to completely overhaul their lists to explicitly define neurotech. They need to create specialized governance committees that combine neuroscientists, tech ethicists, and actual pro players.
They need all the stakeholders at the table.
Exactly. And they must partner with major medical bodies like the FDA to evaluate the actual safety of these electrical devices before they ever hit a tournament stage.
The players in the team organizations have a massive responsibility here as well. Teams need to pivot heavily toward natural doping hiring specialists to optimize player sleep cycles, precision nutrition, and rigorous physical exercise, which we know naturally boosts cognitive function.
Yeah, going back to the basics.
Right. And crucially, teams need to provide proper, integrated psychological support. A lot of players turn to beta blockers or amphetamines simply because they lack the mental tools to handle the crushing anxiety of competing for millions of dollars.
I mean, I would be anxious too.
Of course. If we treat the psychological pressure, we drastically reduce the demand for the chemical crutch.
What I found incredibly insightful in our sources was a specific regional case study they highlighted regarding Iran.
Oh, that was a fascinating section.
Yeah, the esports industry in Iran is still in its early formative growth stages compared to established juggernauts like South Korea or North America. And the analysts point out that this actually gives them a golden opportunity.
A blank slate.
Exactly. Because they are building their national infrastructure right now, they don't have to retrofit old, broken 2013 rules. They essentially have a blank slate.
They do. They have the rare opportunity to establish a national esports federation that has comprehensive anti-doping and neurotech regulations baked into its DNA from day one.
That's huge.
The sources suggest they can collaborate directly with their Ministry of Health to monitor these technologies as they emerge. More importantly, they can implement educational programs directly in schools and universities, teaching young gamers about the severe neurological risks of both chemical and cybernetic doping before the habits and the pressures even form.
Because ultimately, the overarching theme of all these sources is that you cannot just test your way out of this problem. Better drug tests or impossible hotel room raids won't fix the core issue.
No, they won't.
It requires a massive structural culture shift away from this toxic win-at-all-costs mentality. The gaming community has to collectively decide what it actually values more, the human or the machine.
This raises an important question, perhaps the most important one we face.
Mm-hmm.
What do we want the future of competition to look like? The regulatory and cultural choices being made right now in these exact moments will dictate the reality of the next 10 to 15 years.
It really is a turning point.
It is. The future isn't written yet. We can choose to preserve the essence of human skill and vulnerability, or we can surrender it entirely to the allure of technological enhancement.
Well, to you, the learner, thank you for coming along on this deep dive with us today. It is a staggering journey we've been on.
It's a lot to take in.
Yeah, we started by looking at the chemistry of a simple pill that shaves 50 milliseconds off a reaction time. We moved to the physics of lowering neural resistance with raw electricity. And we ended up staring down the barrel of brain implants that completely bypass the human nervous system.
Wild.
It fundamentally alters what it means to be a biological competitor.
The pace of change is breathtaking. And the technology is only accelerating.
It really is. And as we wrap up, I want to leave you with one final, slightly chilling thought to mull over as you go about your day. We've spent all this time talking about esports and professional gamers, but let's broaden the lens.
Okay.
If cybernetic doping and brain-computer interfaces become fully legalized, refined, and completely normalized in the gaming world to process massive amounts of data at superhuman speeds, how long until those exact same neurotech enhancements leap out of the stadium?
Oh, wow.
How long until a neural implant becomes an unspoken requirement just to get a promotion in a high-stakes corporate finance job or to pass a hyper-competitive university entrance exam? Will we all eventually have to become cyborgs just to compete in everyday life? Think about it. We'll catch you next time.